Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, March 4th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Highway 36 remains closed at slide-prone area. Consultant Humboldt Airport hits new records, and the state of education under the Trump administration. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Under light rain conditions, Highway 36 is once again closed due to slide activity on the main east-to-west route for the Eel River Valley. We turn to our partners at Caltrans District 1 for the latest information on the roadway closure.
Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Machado. I'm my public information officer for Caltrans District 1. Route 36 is fully closed east of Swimmer's Delight near the Devil's Elbow Picnic Area from post miles 15 to 16 in Humboldt County due to an active slide. Now, just a short time ago, I did check with staff and our trees, rocks, and debris falling into the roadway. The slide was reported just before 2 this afternoon, and currently there is no estimated time of reopening. We do have our maintenance staff crews on scene monitoring the situation, and as of right now, the roadway will remain closed.
This section of Highway 36 is a slide-prone area. The east-west artery was blocked in the same region due to a slide less than a week ago. When asked what plans Caltrans had for the area, Machado said,
"You know, since it is an active slide area, time will tell. Hopefully Mother Nature will be on our side. As of right now, it is definitely something that we are paying attention to and keep an eye on. Our main concern is the safety of the traveling public. So we will continue to watch the situation, and once it is safe, we will go in there and clear the roadway and make sure it is safe to reopen for the traveling public. Once that is done, we will then look at ways and methods to shore up that hillside and just to make sure that area is safe. But for right now, our main concern is getting the roadway cleared and open to the public."
Machado encouraged KMUD listeners to tune in to official online channels for the latest.
"And we do ask your listeners to please follow Caltrans District 1 on social media or Quick Map for the latest road conditions."
After we spoke with the Caltrans representative, 2nd District Supervisor Michelle Bushnell shared on her social media account that Highway 36 would remain closed until morning. Humboldt County's aviation consultant has said the main airport is getting more use than ever. Daniel Mintz reports.
A consultant has told Humboldt supervisors the county's main airport, the California Redwood Coast Humboldt County Airport, has hit, quote, new passenger records with peak growth in the percentage of residents flying locally. Jack Penning of Volare Aviation Consulting reported the, quote, great news at the February 25th Board of Supervisors meeting, telling supervisors of record levels of airport use.
"We are going to hit, when we get our final audited 2024 numbers, a new passenger record. We're averaging 351 passengers a day who are departing from ACV. That is about 1.5 times where we were just 10 years ago. We've added 211 people a day in the last decade using our airport. It's absolutely terrific, the growth that we have seen and the affordability that we are seeing for the first time in many, many years in using this airport. If we move forward, you go back to 2019, the last time that we studied this market area, we pull all the tickets by zip code within our market area, our immediate area here in Humboldt County. 2019, only 23% of people were using ACV. 77% of people were going to other airports. It's just 5 years ago, right before the pandemic. In 2024, if we move forward one slide, we're up to 41% of this community using our airport. That is the highest share of passengers not driving to other airports that we have ever had in this community."
The airport offers direct flights to San Francisco, Burbank, Los Angeles, and Denver via two airlines, United and Avelo. Penning attributed the growth to the variety of destinations and a trend of lower average fare prices. Volaire's study document gives a clearer picture of what's happening. The average catchment or transfer fare has risen by 24% since 2019 to $263 each way. An average fare drop from the airport itself is, quote, due to the entry of Avelo Airlines and its flights to Burbank, according to the firm's study. Supervisors acknowledged the airport as a boost to the county's economy, with 5th District Supervisor Steve Madrone highlighting its value to its base of operation, McKinleyville.
I'm proud to be in the district where this McKinleyville International Airport is. You know, McKinleyville is an interesting place, right? It's unincorporated, but the airport is a huge asset to that community. And there's a lot of land around the airport that's undeveloped. We have the airport business park that is really, it's primed and ready to go into a whole lot more development with more motels, other things. McKinleyville's looking at or exploring incorporation. There's been a concept for the Vista Point facility to actually become functional to where you could actually get into it when you're driving north and pull people off the highway that then would stop at a visitor center or at that million-dollar view of the ocean in Trinidad, which is the first place you see the ocean after crossing the Golden Gate Bridge. And we don't stop people, and they keep going with their money to Oregon or wherever. And so, you know, the combination of the airport development, Vista Point Park, airport business park developing, and there's even room on our own property on the airport for an additional motel or two or other things, and we're working on a town center. So these things all tie together in a great way for McKinleyville's economic future.
Supervisor Mike Wilson said airport investment boosts revenues and the economy, having a, quote, big multiplier effect. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission has played a key role in negotiating new airline service agreements, and Greg Foster, its executive director, highlighted the payoffs of giving airlines incentives to bring flight service here.
I just want to key off a little bit what Supervisor Wilson was talking about in terms of the incentives, and that's really key. We, REDEC, was able to negotiate and secure the air service agreements for both the LA and Denver service. The LA service was funded without federal money, and we pledged in a minimum revenue guarantee agreement $505,000. Because that service was so successful that they only used some of that incentive in the first quarter, we were able to return all but 93% of the money went back to the donors. So it was an interesting call when I called the Headwaters Fund when the air service contract between United and REDEC ended and said, I'm going to return 93% of your money. They were very excited by that.
Penning said a future vision sets Seattle as, quote, a number one target, and there's an effort to regain service to Salt Lake City. Other goals include regaining service to Las Vegas and getting new service to Phoenix and San Diego. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office has identified the man who died following an encounter with law enforcement on February 26th in Ukiah. Emil Redzik, a 29-year-old Ukiah resident, was pronounced dead at Adventist Health Ukiah Valley Emergency Room at 11:04 p.m. that evening. The incident began with a 911 hang-up call in the area of Brush Street. When deputies responded, they encountered Redzik, who fled on foot and was later found near the Ore Creek Bridge. After an interaction with law enforcement, Redzik showed signs of a medical emergency and went unconscious. Despite life-saving efforts, including Narcan, he was pronounced dead later that night. An autopsy was performed on March 3rd, but the official cause and manner of death have not been determined yet. The investigation is ongoing, and authorities are awaiting additional forensic results. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office at 707-463-4086 or anonymously at 707-234-2100. Turning to news on the nation's education system, The battle over education policy is heating up across the country as the Trump administration pushes forward with sweeping changes, drawing legal challenges and nationwide concern. From defunding diversity initiatives to leadership shakeups at key federal agencies, the administration's actions are already reshaping the educational landscape. Educators and civil rights groups are fighting back against new federal directives that threaten funding for schools with diversity, equity, and inclusion, also known as DEI, programs. The American Federation of Teachers and the American Sociological Association have filed a lawsuit to block an anti-DEI policy recently reinforced by the U.S. Department of Education. The move has left California schools scrambling to determine how to comply without losing federal dollars. Suzanne Potter brings you this report.
The American Federation of Teachers and the American Sociological Association are suing the Trump administration over a threat of funding cuts and investigations of schools that integrate diversity, equity, and inclusion into their policies or lessons. The letter schools received purports to reinforce anti-discrimination laws, but casts efforts to hire or help disadvantaged people of color as a form of discrimination. Roderick Castro, assistant superintendent of Santa Rosa City Schools, notes the letter criticizes using race as a factor in hiring and training.
A letter like this is basically giving them a directive to abandon those. That cuts us off at the knees. We're looking for educators to be more representative of the students that are in the classroom. It's a blow, more of a gut punch to us.
The letter is critical of courses that involve certain racial groups. Castro says ethnic studies classes rightly lift up students' cultural heritage, and he thinks teachers and students should be free to examine the facts about topics like slavery or civil rights. Schools were given until last Friday to comply with the Trump administration's anti-DEI directive, and many colleges are pulling back, even reevaluating campus groups like the Black Student Union. Dr. Chuck Flores teaches social justice and educational leadership at Cal State LA.
We have to provide an open forum for all people of all races to discuss what it is that we need to achieve as a country. Eliminating DEI doesn't go in that direction. I just feel that we're going down a dark hole we're not going to be able to pull out of if people don't wake up and start taking a stand for what's right.
The letter from the Department of Education also says diversity and social justice are not valid reasons to take race or a proxy for race into account for admissions and financial aid. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Meanwhile, a new report from PEN America shows a troubling trend. The majority of last year's school book bans targeted texts featuring people of color and LGBTQ+ narratives. Critics argue that the administration's policies are emboldening censorship and restricting students' access to diverse perspectives. At the federal level, the National Center for Education Statistics, an agency responsible for collecting and analyzing education data, is now facing leadership upheaval. Trump recently suspended Commissioner Peggy Carr, raising concerns about political interference in educational research. KPFA's Christina Onnestad has more.
President Trump suspended the head of the nation's report card, which administers the most extensive academic testing programs in the country. He placed Peggy Carr on administrative leave. Carr was appointed by former President Biden to be commissioner of the National Center for Education Statistics in 2021. Previously, she had been a career employee for more than two decades. The NCES collects and reports data on many different elements of education, but is best known for the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the gold standard in assessments of student achievement. The latest data from the NAEP test released last month showed U.S. 4th and 8th graders in 2024 performing below pre-pandemic levels in reading and math.
And in another shakeup, Trump's pick to lead the Department of Education has been confirmed. A former professional wrestling executive now tasked with overseeing public education in the United States. Critics argue her lack of experience combined with the administration's push to eliminate the department altogether spells disaster for America's schools. KPFA's Christopher Martinez has the details.
President Donald Trump has said he wants his Secretary of Education to shut down the Federal Department of Education and put herself out of a job. On Monday, his nominee, Linda McMahon, got that job with a party-line vote in the Senate.
The yeas are 51, the nays are 45. The nomination is confirmed.
McMahon is a billionaire former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, a job she left in 2009 to enter politics, running two unsuccessful campaigns for Senate. As for education, she served on Connecticut's State Board of Education for a year, and she's a longtime trustee at Sacred Heart University. Democrats opposed her nomination in part because of her limited education leadership experience, but that did not seem to bother Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa.
I know that some people feel that the Secretary of Education should have extensive experience in a school system. However, it is important to remember that education is still mostly a state and local responsibility. There is no such thing as a federal superintendent of education.
Republican Senate Leader John Thune of South Dakota says the federal government is responsible for an outsized amount of education mandates that he says are holding back school districts.
And I look forward to working with Linda McMahon to limit bureaucracy, empower state and local governments, and let good teachers do what they're best at and what they love to do, and that's to help students succeed.
Democrats were solidly united in opposition to McMahon. Democrat Patty Murray of Washington says we need a Secretary of Education who puts students first, even if that means standing up to Trump and Elon Musk. And on that point, she says McMahon fails to make the grade.
Apparently, Ms. McMahon thinks, why should we have a Department of Education if Trump and Elon Musk can actually just tell schools what they can do and what they can teach? Well, let's be clear what it will mean if Trump, Musk, and McMahon have their way and try to turn the Department of Education into something that kids read about in our history books.
She says 26 million K-12 students in low-income neighborhoods could see teachers laid off and schools closed. Support for students with disabilities and Pell Grants and more could be upended by abolishing the Department of Education. Ms. McMahon, now confirmed by the Senate, Trump seems to have gotten what he wants for the Education Department, but there will still be struggles ahead.
Donald Trump and Elon Musk want to rip the heart out of public education in America and abolish the Department of Education. Well, not if I can help it.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Meanwhile, on the North Coast, student activists at Cal Poly Humboldt say they are facing a crackdown on political dissent, with two students recently arrested on charges of felony conspiracy, vandalism, and unlawful use of a mask. Their supporters argue the charges are politically motivated, designed to intimidate student protesters in the wake of last year's Siemens Hall demonstrations. The arrests have gained attention following a statement from President Trump on social media this morning, threatening to cut all federal funding to universities that allow what he calls illegal protests, and warning that students involved in such actions could face permanent expulsion or arrest. Ryan Hudson will be bringing us more on this developing story later this week. The consequences of immigration enforcement policies on children are also coming under increased scrutiny. Fear of impending immigration raids is causing widespread stress for millions of kids in California, with around 1 million children in the state having at least one undocumented parent. Suzanne Potter has more on how children's advocacy groups are responding.
California is bracing for large-scale immigration raids, and groups that advocate for children are speaking out against the climate of fear. Recently, an 11-year-old girl in Texas committed suicide after allegedly being bullied about her family's immigration status. Myra Alvarez, president of the Children's Partnership, says the sense of dread that a parent might be deported is extremely stressful and can lead to physical illness.
That day-to-day worrying, that leads to a host of health issues. Everything from increased anxiety and depression to stomach aches to behaviors that aren't reflective of who they are.
Almost half of California's 9 million children have at least one immigrant parent. One in 10 has an undocumented parent, and one in 5 lives in a mixed-status family. California legislators passed Assembly Bill 699 to protect immigrant students, but schools cannot block Immigration and Customs Enforcement from coming on campus if they have a court order. The Trump administration has changed the rules to clear the way for immigration raids in sensitive locations like churches, hospitals, and schools, something Alvarez condemns.
Immigration enforcement actions shouldn't unnecessarily deter immigrants. Again, many of those immigrants are parents of U.S. citizen children from dropping their kids off at school, going to the doctor, going to church or other religious services.
Advocates are praising local efforts to inform people of their rights and help parents make a plan in case a family member is detained by ICE agents. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This fear has become tragically real in Texas earlier this month, where 11-year-old Jocelyn Rojo Carranza died by suicide after being bullied by classmates who taunted her with threats of reporting her family to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The Gainesville Independent School District confirmed that Jocelyn had overheard these comments on the school bus, leaving her deeply distressed. Her death has sparked national outrage, with advocates pointing to it as a heartbreaking example of the consequences of anti-immigrant rhetoric in schools. The school district has since pledged to review its policies on bullying and student safety. During the KMUD Spring Membership Drive, Education by the People for the People, KMUD News will be highlighting educational programs here on the North Coast. Tonight, we feature the upcoming after-school Bluegrass Club in this interview with the California Bluegrass Executive Director, Pete Lude, and Jason and Ilaria Billard from Helps on the Way.
I'm Pete Lude. I'm the Executive Director of the California Bluegrass Association. That's a nonprofit that was started 50 years ago to preserve and promote bluegrass music, but mostly it's about bringing communities together using the unifying language of music. And for about 30 years, the CBA has had a pretty robust youth program, and it's resulted in some very talented kids coming out, including some Grammy Award winners that came up through our program, and just a lot of other people who haven't made music a profession, but have made it an important part of their life growing up. And we really have been working hard for the last couple of years to find a way to bring it to underserved communities that don't have good arts education, don't have performing arts and music in their classrooms. And this one is now called the After School Bluegrass Club, will be launching starting in April, right there in southern Humboldt County.
So this program is for all the kids in the community from 8 years old to 12 years old.
There's nothing really happening for the youth. I mean, there's sports activities, but there's not really arts and music kind of going on in Southern Humboldt. So we decided that, you know, the ones who are interested in that, we could try to give them somewhere to have that outlet. And starting this school was one of the, you know, the main motivators for that.
The name of this program is After School Bluegrass Club, ABC.
We started it for the Southern Humboldt community, but it's for all the kids in Humboldt County. I grew up in a very rural area that's a little bit more rural than this, you know. It was just farms, and it was, you know, cabbage, potato farms and just regular kind of farms, you know, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing for kids to do, but except we all had music. Like, I grew up in a bluegrass family, and we every Friday we started, and we didn't stop until Sunday evening when everybody had to go to bed. You know, it was constant, just bluegrass. And you know, it was kids playing from 4 years old up to, you know, people that were 85 and 90. And I saw what it did for our community, and I feel it could do the same here.
The program will be 10 weeks, Friday afternoons, at the Bryceland Beginnings Octagon building. And it's an hour class. I will be starting kids out on guitar, because that's a good universal instrument, not too hard to you know, be able to pick up and play before too long. We'll be introducing some of the other bluegrass instruments that you know and love, like mandolin, banjo, bass, and fiddle.
We're borrowing the instruments from the California Bluegrass Association, and we'll do the maintenance and upkeep. And then if anybody wants to donate instruments, they can donate instruments to us, and then we'll do the upkeep and maintenance of those instruments and provide those for the kids.
We will have two classes, one at 2:30, 3:30 on every Fridays. And then the second one will be from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m.
We're probably going to have around 20 spots for the first session. And then we'll have those same 20 can go to the next session. And then we'll have like another 20 more starting, and at some point we'll have more teachers and expand that.
So we're trying to have, you know, a really fun environment, but also to be very conscious of, you know, following good classroom protocols and best practices for education.
The biggest thing around it is going to be the community, because what we're trying to do is have the school, and then after the school at like 5 o'clock every Friday, we're inviting anyone that can play an instrument to come and sit around, you know, the wood stove or the campfire, whatever we have, to just play and share.
And then after the second class, like Jason said, 5 p.m., we invite all the community to come to the Octagon and stay with us and play with us and have some food and drinks and spend some time playing bluegrass with the kids.
And it's, you know, it just brings people together and, you know, you start to know your neighbors. You start to understand what the needs are for the community and who has what and who can help who. And, you know, and it's just something sustainable for us that we really need here.
The curriculum is being put together with expert help from some professional educators in Nashville. So we're trying to have, you know, a really fun environment, but also to be very conscious of, you know, following good classroom protocols and best practices for education.
But for right now, you can sign up on the California Bluegrass Association website. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to helpsontheway2023@gmail.com.
We're delighted to be working with Valeria and Jason to kick off our pilot project right there in Gerberville.
So come to see the kids playing, show up and like bring some happiness.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christopher Martinez, Suzanne Potter, and Christina Onnestad. And a special thanks to KMUN News Assistant, Sigur Bjorn. KMUN News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, Instagram, and Facebook, and now streaming on most podcast platforms. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.